Radio Podcast. Countdown to 400 episodes is on. Right, what, 8 or 9 away, something like that.
Back, and, bitches, after a lot of crying and begging for me to come
somebody's
back.
Crying.
I'm back.
It's behind me. I didn't even say he was here yet, but yes, long.
Kablam. Boom.
The man with the plan joining us today for the show. We didn't beg. We didn't beg him at all. We didn't beg him. In fact, he texted us and begged us. Please, guys, you know, I'll suck your penises. No, you don't say, but
you no, wish. Long doesn't do that shit.
I'm not above that.
I'm not above. Man, I was trying to go to bat for Long. Long.
Hey, man, you know, whatever man has to do, man has to do. It's 21st century. You know, we don't judge.
I'm a modern person. Forward thinking.
Keeping up with the times, baby.
Keeping up with the times, exactly. Yeah.
Ouch.
According to Disney.
Saying? Yeah. But in our 10th anniversary, officially on the way and coming up soon. A lot of good things happening. Compalooza coming up. And this is the kickoff to our April theme month. Monsters, monsters, monsters. That's what we're doing this month. And kicking off today with the King of the Monsters here in just a bit. And some things to talk about. But, man, Long, it's good to have you back on the show, even though we got to bust your balls a little bit. And hope you're doing well, sir.
I am doing okay at the start of 2024. Okay. I have been eating good compared with the current franchise we're about to talk about.
There we go.
And now we're about to hit the drought after this weekend.
Yeah.
I was looking, I realized, and we'll get to some stuff in a minute, but I went to the theaters today that we'll talk about that movie in a minute. And then of course the feature film today ties into that movie. And I realized the next movie I'll see in theaters will probably be another movie with monkeys. Cause I was looking at the schedule. I don't think I'm going back till Kingdom and Planet of the Apes comes out. So it'll be a back-to-back monkey films. That's okay.
You're talking about Monkey Man.
Nah.
Action film.
I'll wait till that goes streaming.
The Planet of Harambe.
You're not going to go see The Fall Guy?
No.
No.
No, movies made on cheesy 80s TV series never turn out well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean,
what about Episode 1? You can go see Episode 1?
I can watch it on Disney Plus.
Okay.
And I've seen that on the big screen. They're re-releasing Phantom Menace.
Yeah,
I saw it 3 or 4 times when it originally released. I saw it in the 3D release back, you know, for the 20th anniversary or whatever it was, 10 years ago. Was this the 30th anniversary? Or 25th? No, it was 1999. So it'll be the 25th anniversary, yeah.
Yeah, 25th.
And I know a few years ago, I know they did a 3D release. So I saw it then. So yeah, I've seen it. Plenty on the big screen. I don't think I need to go spend money to see it again. It's Phantom Menace. It's all right. It's nothing spectacular. But yeah, so, you know, monkeys at the movies. But,
quite literally.
But, no, this is Monsters, Monsters, Monsters Month, not monkeys, monkeys, monkeys. So, yeah.
Nope. Different M.
That's right. but other than that, man, just doing well. Matt, you're doing well this week too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Had a blast today. Some family time. Been seeing cool stuff at the theaters lately. Yeah.
Yeah.
This week was strong.
Yeah, man. Speaking of things we watched, dude, how cool is X-Men 97?
I like it.
Dude, it's just like such a cool nostalgic trip, but yet it feels like they're, you know, Marvel has taken a hit lately with their films and things like that. We know this. But, man, this animation studio they set up to do this, it feels like it never left the air. It's really amazing what they've done in just 3 episodes, you know.
It is better animated.
It is a little better animated. No, I completely agree. But, man, it's just like the writers did their homework on this. They studied it. They're like, how do we make this like it never left? And
Madeline Pryor. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, and you know, the whole Nathan Summers storyline that they alluded to in the original animated series, but they never got to it. Now we're going and telling that story of how Nathan was sent to the future and everything, and it's a man, it's incredible. I love it, man. I'm really like, it's one of those shows I wish all 10 episodes were out right away, because it's like, it sucks having to wait every week for a 25 minute episode, you know. But I guess it's no different than when we were kids in the 90s and we had to wait till a new episode aired on Fox the next week, you know. So it gives you that sense of nostalgia. But really, really loving it so far. And just, I like it, man. So you're all caught up on it too, Matt?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm caught up. Got the first three episodes in. And man, they definitely got you with the anticipation factor in the series where, you know, they're just releasing one episode a week. And you got to wait. You know, there's just nothing else you can do but wait. You know, the first two episodes, I guess they released the first two, but smart tactic. I think that brings up the anticipation, and you know, you don't get, you can't binge it, but there's something nice about having to wait, for that episode to come out and it adding to, the excitement that you get for each episode, just like you'd have to wait back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm digging. Have you been watching along?
I've unsubbed from Disney after they raised the price twice last year, so no, I haven't watched it.
That's why I dropped back. I dropped back down recently to the new $9.99 package. I get Hulu and Disney. It's got some ads.
I'm keeping my money. Yeah. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm reading.
But I gotta have it to watch. I gotta have it to watch The Bad Batch, and then Acolyte's coming soon. Yeah. You know,
so. Long's got the sass. Got all that sass over there.
Yeah. Now I dropped my Netflix down the ad version. I dropped everything down the cheaper versions.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's almost like they're bragging about raising their prices the third time on Netflix.
I do applaud Peacock and Paramount for keeping theirs $5.99. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And,
impressive. Even though me and Matt, I share Matt's Peacock, but he shares my Paramount. So it works out, you know.
Yeah. Just swap it.
Yeah, and Peacock, if you're a wrestling fan, it's almost like you have to have it. I mean, you know, so much.
Yeah, Peacock's a really good deal since you're getting WWE Live.
Yeah, archives. The live PLEs, yeah. All the documentaries are on there for WWE.
Yeah, and, but if you're WWE, they're moving to Netflix soon.
No, yeah, but not till January.
Yeah.
Yeah. But from what I understood, the Peacock deal doesn't change. You know, they're still going to have all that on there. It's just Raw is moving to Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You know, and Raw's moving to Netflix, SmackDown's moving over to USA, but the streaming deal they have with Hulu and with Peacock is still staying the same, from what I understand. Yeah. When that deal goes.
Okay, through. But what about like
live PLE? Events? The PLEs, from what I know, are still gonna be on Peacock. Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a hell of a deal, you know. So that's a good deal. I mean, X-Men 97, good shit, man. And other than that, man, I know we all went to see a movie this weekend, but I got to back up a little bit. I went and saw the new Ghostbusters since last time I recorded, Frozen Empire.
How was
Matt, it? I believe you saw it too.
Yes, sir.
Man, I enjoyed it. Not as much as Afterlife. You know,
same.
The first hour of it is messy. Like the first hour, they introduce a bunch of new characters. Bill Murray just sort of shows up out of convenience. You're like, wait, where did he come from? Oh, I guess it's Bill Murray. It doesn't matter where he came from. There's some weird, like Winston is now financing them, but yet he gives them, he doesn't fix the car. They have the shitty equipment. It's kind of weird. It's like, okay, but then he's doing this secret thing over here on the side where he's got this secret ghostbusting lair with this tech that he doesn't tell the Ghostbusters about till he shows him. It's like, so are you really financing it? It was just felt strange.
Yeah.
You know? And then the second half of the movie is much better. It kind of finds a focus and it becomes what we expect from a Ghostbusters film in the second half. So I did enjoy the second half of the movie better, but it's just not as focused as Afterlife was. But it's not terrible, but it's not great either. You know, Matt, I know you
it's still diet
feel like you want to jump in there, Matt.
Yeah, it's like diet ghostbusting. It's the Diet Coke of Ghostbusters. It's like, I feel like there's not enough ghostbusting in it. Until the end, it's like super loaded at the end. And it's great, but it's like, why couldn't we get the bad guy all the way through?
One thing I have seen, he just sort of shows up in the last 15 minutes.
Exactly. And he's badass. And it's like, it'd be kind of cool if we had this badass villain throughout the entire film.
Driving the plot of the film instead of exposition driving the plot of the film.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you done it, you know, kind of like they did with Vigo, but this guy's like scarier, you know.
So they used up their entire budget on the last 15 minutes.
Well, even in Afterlife, even though Gozer doesn't show up till the end, the mountain itself was the plot device to drive the film as they were trying to figure out what was going to their small town. So when Gozer does show up, the payoff still works. But like you said, in Frozen Empire, that payoff doesn't work as well because, oh, he shows up and then he's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. And someone made a comment about how it feels like a real Ghostbusters episode, like the animated episode. And it does.
That's fair.
It does kind of feel like a live action real Ghostbusters episode. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, those really, I don't know. I think they work better as a cartoon versus transposing those into a movie.
Well, sure.
Because of the lag time, the information. I think, you know, you've already kind of established everybody in the last film. And I think you can start off like Age of Ultron, you know, just getting, you know, blasted out of a cannon. You know, they're in action, which they kind of were, but not as extravagant as I probably would have liked. Cool that we got a look at Slimer again. But
yeah. Then speaking of that opening sequence where you're just sort of thrown into some action, it's like, you know, the original one thing that they captured with the original is that, you know, the comedy is done by comedy geniuses and it's timed and it works. Like, to me, it's like Paul Rudd and I don't know what the actress's name that plays, you know, Phoebe's mom and all that. It's overly forced. You can tell it's scripted and there's nothing natural about it. And it's like, oh, I'm supposed to be laughing at Paul Rudd, but it's not funny. And that really is kind of irritating. Like it worked a little better in Afterlife. I think this time it didn't work as well.
Doesn't feel improvised.
And the strangest thing is the kids are all really good in the movie. They're better than the adults, you know,
that's
sad that the kids do their job and they're good in the movie. And just like they were in Afterlife and the adults just feel like they're there to babysit the kids in some ways in this film, you know? It's not a bad Ghostbuster film. I'd probably prefer it over Ghostbusters 2, which I still think is not a very good film. And it's definitely better than the girl one. The girl one's horrible. Yeah. But it's not as good as Afterlife.
I liked it. I liked the 2016 one.
Oh, no. Nobody likes that movie long. Come on now.
Just because other people don't like it doesn't mean I have to conform. Thank you very much.
And no, it's not about
conforming. At least it has more Ghostbusting than this one.
He is right on that one. Mm-hmm. That didn't have more Ghostbusting.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, like I said, it's worth seeing if you're a fan of the franchise, you know.
It's Ghostbusting. You know, I wish they would have done the original idea that these were like, you know, the daughters and there was like a lineage thing going on. You know, they just made it too, for me, I just feel like you need the straight man. Like, you know, like you said, you know, Egon was like that straight man where he just played everything straight. He was very monotone and he gave a break in the tone of the scenes. This one, they're just people are way too dumb. Like Chris Hemsworth is way, way too dumb. It's so dumb. It's not even funny.
That was in the girl one.
Yeah. We're talking about the girl. I thought we were talking about the girl one.
No, I wasn't talking about the girl. I just said, nobody likes that movie. You're the only one still talking about the girl one. I thought we were going back to Frozen Empire.
But yeah, good job. The humor is there, Matt. Yeah. Sorry. I got lost and I blame Long. He's throwing too many Ghostbusters movies in there.
Don't blame Long. He didn't do anything.
Oh, okay. But yeah, could have been better, but I still enjoyed it. It was still fun. to an extent. I just think it would have worked better as a real Ghostbusters episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair to say.
What was the budget of Frozen Empire?
That was definitely bigger. That's sure a good question.
Because I'll circle back to that once we talk about the movie we saw. Let's see. Let's see here.
One thing I do really like McKenna Grace, who plays Phoebe, though. She's quite good. A talented young lady. And I do think there's enough there with her as she continues to get older that she could carry the franchise further. You know, I think she's really good in the role. I think if you do a third one in this new series, you need to maybe wait 2 or 3 years till she's a little bit older. Let her take over. Put Paul Rudd and the other girl into the background so there's not so much adults interfering. Because they make a comment in this one how she's grounded by the mayor because she's only 15 years old. So let's move on to the next one when she's 18. And Winston hands her the keys of the Ghostbusters and lets her do better things. You know. And we go
give
on
them
there.
A better script or more improvising. I mean, even though Matt mentioned that Egon was a straight foil, Egon did bring a dry sense of humor too. So,
yes,
and it's right. Mostly improvised too in the original one too. So it wasn't scripted. So.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, Ghostbusters is still definitely a viable franchise, and I think there's room there for more stories in that universe. But, you know, just let's sit back next time. And you know, to be fair to this one, too, I had a feeling, I think I mentioned on the podcast before, that when it just started, it got delayed filming a couple of times. It was supposed to be out at Christmas, and then it just wrapped production like this past summer, and I'm like, they're going to edit and special effects this film in 6 months and put it out. When you hear that, you know right away, okay, there's going to be problems, you know, because a really good high special effects film with good editing, minimal a year, you know? So when you have that six month post-production time, you just start to worry.
Who knows? They might have been working on it simultaneously too, you know, with the previs and who knows, you know?
Yeah. But,
probably other than that, overlapping.
I didn't really watch anything else at home this week except for the movie that we hit theaters this weekend and we all went and saw. Well, Matt, before we move to that movie, Matt, Long, anything y'all have watched lately?
I have, but Long, if you want to go, since you've been a minute since you've been on.
No, you go first. Okay. I have to think about this.
Yeah, I was actually, I heard David Ayer's Beekeeper was actually entertaining. And even though it obviously looks like a John Wick, you know, clone.
Don't tell me you paid $20 to rent this.
No. I paid $5 to rent it. So,
which means it'll go on streaming next week.
Did he punch any bees
anyways.
Like he punched the sharks?
I don't know if you've kept up with the show lately listening, but every time Matt rents a movie for $20 or $6, it goes streaming the next week, or if he buys it. This has been a major trend Matt's been doing lately.
Yeah, kind of like Good Luck Chuck or washing your car and then it rains.
I think it's Matt's way of going out to like a Blockbuster, except virtually.
Yeah,
I need something to do on a Friday or Thursday night, so I'm just like, oh, let me browse, whatever.
Yep, I'm gonna order a quesadilla and buy this movie for $20. That'll stream on Tubi next week. But I did check it out, and I will say the action is good. The action's good. I felt like it was worth the $5.
Well, David Ayer's never had a problem with action.
Yeah, yeah.
His Suicide Squad wasn't because of the action sequences. Fury wasn't because of the action sequence. It's other things in his films.
Yeah,
tend to be problems.
The only thing is like kind of like incorporating. So he's a beekeeper. I'm a beekeeper that kill people, part of a secret organization of sorts. He retires as a beekeeper, and this woman's taking care of him. She gets scammed by this company that tries to scam people that have millions of dollars. She commits suicide. And he basically hunts down this company who runs this scam company and starts killing everybody. Jeremy Irons is this retired CIA director that's, I guess, head of security of this company, this, like, you know, freaking scam company. The guy from Five Nights at Freddy's that was PETA in Hunger Games is the antagonist. And he's okay. You know, it's all about Jason Statham killing people, basically, in this movie. And I guess, you know, the beekeepers are supposed to take out the new queen, which PETA, the guy who plays PETA in Hunger Games, is. So he tries to take him out to replace him with another queen bee, I guess, is how they term it. There's a lot of bee references in this film. But he is confronted by another that replaced him as a beekeeper. And you're supposed to...
I didn't know we were going to get the entire plot.
Yeah. I'm telling you, because it's like, it's been out forever, you know? At this point, it feels like forever. It came out in January. But it's basically like John Wick, but if they replaced a Baba Yaga with a Baba Yaga, and then both Baba Yagas fought, you know, and had this epic fight. So if you want to check it out, you know, check it out.
All right. I think I gave you too much rope there to you hang did. Yourself there.
I took it, and I did hang myself.
I mean, I've already learned with Jason Statham, unless he's working with...
Yeah. Was that
unless
it?
He's working with Guy Ritchie, most of his movies are all the same.
Yeah. Hey, you notice my nameplate here on the
LXT.
Yeah. Anyways.
So you want to fight for yourself?
Yeah, right. Anyhow. No, it was not fighting myself. I'm friends with myself.
There you go. I know X people X doesn't mean versus, I know.
Yeah. So I saw Oppenheimer. I texted that to y'all.
Yeah.
Totally it got ignored and blown off. Like, that's okay, whatever.
I think I liked it. That. I think I liked the text.
I
thought we said something. I'm pretty sure we responded.
Something about Oppenheimer. It got totally ignored by y'all. That's okay.
No, you know what happened? I think it was right after the Oscars you saw, and I think we started talking about minus one winning or something instead. I know we didn't blow you off.
Yeah. Would have been nice with a little hand job, too. But whatever.
Oh, you're right. We completely ignored you.
Yeah.
You said it that night. And then we didn't say anything for 2 days.
Yeah.
And Mark mentioned that. It's been...
I ignore Frank all the time, so don't feel bad.
So Oppenheimer, I saw that. It was good. It was more about I can't really describe his moral ambiguity or his moral guilt over inventing the or running the whole atomic bomb program. Mm-hmm. That scene where he's in with President Truman, who's played by Gary Oldman, is so memorable because, you know, Oppenheimer's there lamenting about, hey, I have blood on my hands. And then Truman, he's like, waves a handkerchief in front of him. It's like, well... I'm the one who basically, he didn't have to say anything. He was the one who ordered the usage of the bombs anyways.
Yeah.
And
you think they're going to remember you?
Yeah.
Or remember the one guy that gave the call.
Yeah. Take that crybaby out of there.
Yeah.
Get that crybaby out of here.
He's like, I don't want to see him again.
That's freaking Truman though. He was, you know, he hard on this. Hard on the sleeve type of a person.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mince words. And during his time, he was the most disliked president for firing General MacArthur during the whole Korean War thing. But then again, justifiable because MacArthur wanted to use nukes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But anyhow, I don't know. I feel like the movie was a little overrated. It did the whole time skipping thing, but it wasn't as bad as Dunkirk's time skipping. I do like Robert Downey Jr.'s character though. yeah, his perspective of seeing things in black and white, versus whenever we're seeing Oppenheimer's perspective on things as well. I give it a B, you know.
What about Florence? What about Florence, man? Florence, you didn't say anything about Florence.
She's not a CGI body. That's not even her body.
No, it's not CGI'd.
Yes, it is. Just look it up.
No, I'm not doing it. La la la.
Yeah, that's Christopher Nolan even said that was the hardest CGI he's ever done.
Oh no. Huh.
Body double.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's ruined my life.
The butt was a body double?
Just look it up. Yeah. The full frontal. Yeah, that's all CGI.
The Matt Waits in the sad now.
Yeah.
But is it really necessary, really? I mean, to even show all that?
Yes. Not really. It reminds people that scientists can get laid. And that's important.
Yeah.
For science.
Yeah. But anyhow, moving on. A B.
Yeah. I survived 10 years of podcasting with you. It's amazing. So that's the most major thing you watched lately. Hiatus.
That's the only thing I could think of, except for a ton of anime. So that no one would really care about. So,
well, it's strange because our featured film is not the film we're fixing to talk about, even though they're related, but we are going to talk about a movie also on theaters. It's hit theaters this weekend. So it might go to a little spoiler territory here, but this episode comes out on Monday, so hopefully you saw it this weekend. But that is Godzilla Kong, The New Empire. Man, this movie, you know, talk about like great, you know, first off, the CGI in it was, I felt at times not good and times good. And you could tell, like you were talking about the budgets and how this movie was done. I know it's the lowest budget of the MonsterVerse films. And I think, and there's moments where it suffered that, like, especially the beginning of the film where Kong rips the animals in half and it just looks like kind of watery CGI, you know? But then later in the film, it gets better. So I think that's where that lower budget for this MonsterVerse film suffered a little bit. Cause I thought the CGI in Godzilla versus Kong was fantastic. Where this time I was like, there's some things that were a little, questionable.
I thought that, the CGI,
it was serviceable.
Well, no, it's better than that. It looked really, really good when it mattered, and for any passing moment, then yeah, they can kind of schlep it a little bit, you know. Yeah.
That's fair.
So, like all the emotional beats of Kong, really, you could really see the conflict. Good visual storytelling, honestly.
Yeah.
You know,
because
there was hardly any dialogue at all in half the movie, if you think about it.
Yeah, the action and the situation really drove the story.
Yeah,
it's a big, dumb, fun movie. You know, you can't even compare it to Minus One, which got all the rave reviews because they're a completely different style of films, completely different way to tell a Godzilla story. So that's not even fair. And there's room in this franchise for both types of films, absolutely. I did feel that Adam Wingard, the director, understands the Showa era. So there's definitely some throwbacks to that as far as the craziness of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I think he pulled from some of the craziness of the Showa era. My biggest thing with this is like, I felt like a lot of it was just like too convenient to drive the plot. I guess it takes place a few years after Godzilla versus Kong. You know, Monarch's well established. You have these points all over the Earth to go into Hollow Earth. And where'd all this tech come from? I know these alt universes, these alternate Earths, you're supposed to accept that they're in a movie universe and things happen. But it's just like, where did we get technology all of a sudden with these laser ships and things like this? And it's just kind of like, I know you're supposed to take it for what it is, but I guess it was messing with my mind. Like, explain it to me a little bit at least, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then like you're building some sort of prototype for Kong's arm, right? And his metal arm, and you're building it in Hollow Earth. Wouldn't that cost you millions to keep transporting the parts needed to Hollow Earth? Why would you not just build the whole thing on Earth? And then when it's done, transport it down there. It's like, you know, it's like, wait a minute. I guess I was under
the impression that it was already there.
That's what Wyatt said. Wyatt's like, they probably already built it down. They moved it. I'm like, but yeah. He even said it was
because he had to go to the destroyed outpost to retrieve it or something.
Yeah. So, you know, so there were little things like that. And then like, there's this tribe that's been living down there all these years. I was like, wait, that's awfully convenient, you know? And
it's,
you know,
not Hollow Earth, remember. It's Hollow Earth.
I know.
Yeah, subterranean. Yeah.
Subterranean realm. Like,
that just happens. That was very convenient that there's this tribe down there to drive the plot to bring Mothra back. I was like, oh, okay. But I thought we already saw Mothra's home in the King of the Monsters movie. Right?
Yeah.
So it's like, so they retcon that a little bit, like, oh, never mind, Mothra's living down here. But, you know, but I enjoyed it. You know, I can sit back and take it for what it is, but I didn't like it as much as Godzilla versus Kong. But I still, like, the last 20 minutes were fantastic. I mean, I'll give that all the credit in the world. And then before I let you guys talk, I want to say one last thing. I feel like the production designers, I know that they don't want to spend the money on Toho to bring Rodan and Ghidorah back because Toho wants a lot of money for them. But your concept artist and your production artist, Gangsta, Kong, Scar King, and Dollar General Frozen Godzilla, the best they could come up with, they weren't very frightening to me. Am I right? It's like, come on, that's the best your concept artist could come up with. It's like, you know, Dave Filoni comes up with better stuff episodes of Bad Batch every week. I mean, that's fair to say, right? That I was like, come on, you can't create more bad. Though the eel monster that Godzilla kills in the middle of the movie was cooler. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I will say that. That was a cooler monster.
Yeah.
I didn't mind their designs, honestly.
No, I'm okay with it, but I just feel like they should have been more. When you see the trailers and they're advertising that something's got Kong so scared and Godzilla's got to radiate up, I just felt like they weren't scary enough. Like, yeah. That's it?
Doesn't justify the power leveling that Godzilla was doing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ghidorah would have justified that power level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Now that we got the negative Nancy stuff out of the way, that's why I wanted Mark to speak first. This is the stuff that I saw that to my perspective that I liked. I really liked the human story a little bit more.
Yes.
Compared to Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah.
It was still
subpar. Yeah, maybe. That's debatable. But
admit this. There was no reason for the podcast dude to come back in this film. He didn't need to be in it.
I agree.
It made me laugh.
At least Trapper had some stuff to do, but podcast dude didn't need to be.
No, yeah. I mean, he was there. I can agree that podcaster was there because the director liked working with the actor. Right. You know, but he made me laugh a couple of times here and there. Didn't care for his documentary stuff too, but I do like Dan Stevens' character, who absolutely brought nothing to the story except for the dental work, the power glove, and the 80s hair metal music.
And dressing like Ace Ventura.
And dressing like Hawaii Five-0. Yes. So, dressed up like Ace Ventura. Come on, man.
Well, that's what podcast guy said. He said,
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't think about it until I was like, holy crap. Hey, he's wearing like a regular shirt and then a Hawaiian shirt, just like Ace wore.
You know, I didn't realize until a little bit earlier today that Rebecca Hall was basically the lead character as far as the human side of it.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah. Her and Gia had a nice little small story arc.
I like that arc. Yeah.
So I guess we're going to talk about spoilers real quick. But yeah, the human characters were very minimal. admittedly, but it's focused. If everything felt focused, there was no Team Godzilla or Team Kong going on like in the previous film. It was just the whole gang's together and they're just trying to figure stuff out. I do like Gia's little story arc where she's confused in the surface world, and then all of a sudden, you know, all the answers are all the questions are answered when they went down to the hollow earth. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice, a missed opportunity, if the leader of the Iwi tribe was actually a twin. That would have been a nice callback to the Mothra, the original Mothra lore, because she was always had two twin avatars.
To speak twin fairies, her. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been nice, but I guess the budget is like, you know, we can't double shoot her, you know, for one set right. to the other, because we need to keep our budget low. Yeah. But yeah, $135 million budget. Pretty remarkable with all the CGI that's going on. A lot of blue screen, I guess. Yeah. So, but I saw from the perspective of what Adam Winger was going for. He was kind of like going for the Scar King's design as being an anti-Kong. And the Shimo was kind of an anti-Godzilla, but I don't know. Shimo was a pretty big kaiju. Yeah. But I kind of felt sympathy for Shimo because she was being controlled by the Scar King. You know, so I was kind of glad that it was like, you know, it was not its fault for doing what it was doing.
Right. And they allude that at the end that Shimo is actually one of the good Titans and was just being controlled because she's standing next to Kong as the film ends.
Yeah. Yeah. But even though Scar King was not as threatening as far as like a power level, he was a bastard of a villain. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's like, you really hated that character because of, you know, it freaking killed Diddy Kong's mom by kicking her into the lava. And, well, I don't know if it's a mom or not. They were.
It looked like it was. I assumed it was the mom, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And at first, I was a little nervous about the Suko, the little Kong, mm-hmm. being in the film. I was like, I hope it's not going to be an annoying child character. But what did you think of that?
I think the child character had purpose. You know, at first it looked like to me that the child character was trying to lure Kong into, you know, bad territory where he would get killed by the elements, which is why he led him to that giant like serpent fish thing. But then he ends up, you know, helping by warning of what's coming, by helping deliver the axe to Kong through the portal, so he could, you know, have an equalizer, another equalizer other than the Infinity Gauntlet there. It looked very Code Veronica from Ultron to me with that that power gauntlet getting delivered, and I was like, I wonder if it's going to have the same motion, and we're going to get a go to sleep.
I was watching it, and it was like, okay, they're really pushing this to make me. I'm in walking that fine line of me checking out. Really, how ridiculous the whole power glove thing was.
Yeah.
To be fair, but you know, when you were talking about the whole Suko luring Kong into the water. To trick him, to get him get attacked. That was all visual storytelling. You were watching Suko's eye language, facial expressions, like, okay, the little thing's up to something. There was no human explaining the whole thing to us.
No subtitles. No
subtitles, nothing. We were just like, okay, that little bastard's up to something.
That, and you knew it, yeah.
And that's how good the animators are with that, you know, and I'm just like, yeah, for like 20 or 30 minutes we're just watching Kong's story, and you know, he's doing a Home Alone bit with his home and with all the traps he set up, and his whole fight with the Scar King, and you could see the Scar King has a whole little harem of female Kongs, and they're holding babies, and you know, and you could tell he's Scar King's kind of like the the gang leader of this prison that they're in, and you know, everyone's afraid of him based on their body language. So yeah, and this is a really good Kong movie, you know, and it feels like everyone's complaining about there's not enough Godzilla, but I personally don't mind it, because honestly, on my end, I've been needing a lot of Godzilla content. So it's like, okay, you know, we watch Godzilla Minus One, and then we watch Monarch, you know, it's like, okay, I think I've got enough.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there's, and Kong has been a character over the years that's been in cinema that we've had the same story told many times, where he climbs New York Empire State Building and he falls to his death. And it's kind of refreshing to see such a really cool cinematic creation used in other ways. And I thought that going back to Skull Island, I was like, man, this is cool, you know? And then we got him versus Kong in the movie a couple years ago, and now this one. And I agree with that, to get to see more of him than the same story it's always told. So, you know, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, Kong was portrayed as like he's definitely the alpha of that world. And you know, it was like, oh gosh, there's four other apes ganging up on him. He's going to get
beat. He whooped their ass.
He whooped their butts, yeah. Like easy. It's pretty cool, you know, because, okay, Winger does a really good job. It's like, this is why Kong is the OG. This is why he's a badass. And I'm going to show you why. And I've never expected to see Godzilla give Kong a suplex before a freaking wrestling move like that. And then using the Zuko, the little monkey, as a freaking nunchuck, you know.
Yes. That was I was like, damn, he's beating the shit out of the other little monkey.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the whole, that scene in the prison scene where one of the other Kongs are just like cursing him out, and then Kong's just standing there. Yeah. Say your bit, and then just sucker punches him, knock him out. Like the whole theater started laughing at that. So, you know, what was your audience reaction? What were they reacting to for y'all?
I mean, I went to 10:20 this morning, so it was a bit quiet in my theater, you know, but it still had, you know, its moments.
Yeah. Were there a lot of kids for y'all too?
Yeah.
Amount. Mainly teenagers in mine. I went Friday at 10:30 AM. So similar, or 11:15, sorry, 11:15. So similar to Mark, it was kind of early. And they did clap at the end, but during the show, it's like, they did like the fight between Kong and Godzilla when he's trying to get him down into the portal.
Yeah.
And me and my son literally looked at each other and said, pocket sand. Whenever Kong threw the sand in Godzilla's face, and he ran into the pyramid. I thought that was funny. But minimal. But at the end, yeah, there was some congratulatory applause. But man, I like the vet in this film. He's very kind of quirky.
Yeah.
Kind of like what Paul Rudd does best, you know. But he did it in his own way. I remember him from The Guest. It was a movie called The Guest that he was
on. I've seen that movie, yeah.
Yeah.
He was like a freaking Terminator towards the end.
Yeah. Secret military also, project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I was thinking, you know, after watching Monarch and the battle between Godzilla and the Mutos in San Francisco was a very important part of that story, as the world recovered and people recovered from losing loved ones and things like that. And one thing I do have to say about this movie is it kind of like threw all that out. Like, we just destroyed Rio de Janeiro. We destroyed half of Rome.
It went Man of Steel.
It went Man of Steel. Like, oh, well, so much for people mourning in San Francisco during the Monarch show. We just destroyed a couple of major cities.
Rio needed some renovation anyways.
For real, right?
Right.
Can you imagine being in the building where freaking Scar King was using the end of the building as a whip? You know, a club, and it's like, oh, I can't imagine being inside that building while it's being swung around like that, you know. So it's like,
but, you know, the movie looks like it's tracking for bigger opening than I thought. Originally, they were saying 50 to 55, now they're saying it might make upward 65 to 70. So that's good. You know, I do think the MonsterVerse, though, if it's going to continue, needs to split back up again. Let's do a Zilla movie and let's do a Kong movie, which has been the rumors for a while now that they're going to do split movies. and then come back for another big Titan mashup, you know. So we'll see if that comes to fruition or not. But I think the universe is fun enough that I hope it's able to continue and they do more. You know, Winger's already said he's on board. He'll do more. You know, he hasn't said where he wants to do just Godzilla or just Kong, but he said he'd come back.
Well, he said just a couple of hours ago that he wants to just at least finish the trilogy, and the next installment is definitely going to be Godzilla centric, rather than the Kong centric stuff, which I'm fine with. But I also one thing of note is that I didn't expect, like the last movie, I didn't expect to see King Kong fight Mechagodzilla in my wildest dreams. But in this in this one, I didn't expect to see Kong and Mothra in the same scene. It's like, okay, that's cool. You know,
yeah.
They did a great job.
Yeah, they did a great job with the trailers not showing that. Apparently, I was reading, if you go back and watch the trailers, there are scenes they pulled a Spider-Man where they took Mothra out of the trailer on purpose.
Yeah.
Okay.
To not spoil it. So, you know.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
They did create an original monster. And I think the Mothra thing was like last minute, like when Toho finally like, okay, good, you could use her, you know. So it was almost a last minute thing, but they did have a monster created as, you know,
backup plan,
you know, fully animated and everything. It's like, okay, cool, we have Mothra. Add the antennas and take out the legs and make it look more like a bug, you know, or just take the assets from King of the Monsters and insert it in here, you know. So, and give it a glowy aura.
Yeah, make it glow.
I'm glad Mothra was definitely portrayed as the good Titan. She was rescuing the ship and fighting with the battle, which is pretty cool. And she didn't die, thankfully.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Overall, with all the flaws and stuff in the film, I would personally score it like a B or B+. That's for me, you know. I think I definitely want to rewatch it again though. So
yeah,
it's got entertainment value.
Yeah, that's definitely fun. Yeah, and it's one of those movies I think make like I didn't love Godzilla vs. Kong the first time I watched it, other than the Mecha Godzilla fight. But now I've watched it a few times, I like it a lot more. So you know, I think this is one of those two might grow me a bit more. It's hard. I still think the best MonsterVerse film is still Gareth Edwards' first Godzilla movie. Yeah. Because it's just scaled down and it's just solid, you know. But none of this would be possible, huh?
Well, before we go there, I'm sorry. I did come up with my personal list of ranking of the MonsterVerse films before we get there. But before I share this list from worst to best, Matt, Mark, how would y'all score the movie?
I think B+ is fair.
Yeah.
I think that's.
I'd probably go a little less than that. I'd probably say like a B-.
B- or C+.
It's just too many plot conveniences for me to really love it. But when it comes to the kaiju action, I'll give it an A because that's the battles were badass.
Yeah. What did you think, Mark, of the non-dialogue scenes? In the film.
It's fine. I liked it. I mean, we've been seeing that going back, you know, we talked about Kingdom of Planet of the Apes coming out, even the Planet of the Apes movies and how well they've done showing Caesar's story with very little dialogue and sign language. And I think they did a great job doing that too.
Yeah.
I even liked that in Godzilla vs. Kong, where we got to see, I can't think of the little girl's name when she was communicating with Kong, you know, it's cool stuff.
You know, in there's only been 5 movies in this 10-year history of the MonsterVerse, and you compare that to Marvel, which is kind of not fair. But Marvel had like 2 to 4 movies each year.
Yeah, it was, I think the first 10 years was 18 movies.
18 movies. Like that. Yeah, that's like practically triple the amount. Yeah. So I'm fine with the MonsterVerse being like a movie event every 2 or 3 years to kind of,
you don't want to oversaturate it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, circling back to that, here are my rankings for the MonsterVerse, you know, And even though it's like 5-1, I mean, even the last one is, they're not that bad. I mean, they're to me, they're really good movies. But 5, I'm going to have to put the very last is Godzilla 2014. There was a lot of teasing in that film, and I understood why. But and when the action does start, it's really good. It is pretty pretty dark and cinematic when it needs to be. And, you know, credited for having original monster designs and the sense of scale. But Godzilla 2014 is my last. Next is Kong Skull Island. I've watched it multiple times. I really like the whole, you know, Vietnam War aesthetic to it. I do like Samuel Jackson and John C. Reilly's character in there. I love the exploration of Skull Island itself. Kong as a character is portrayed really well. Number 3 in the middle is Godzilla vs. Kong. A good entry. Really cool action. I mean, and they settled the whole debate of who's better, Godzilla or Kong, and they settled it with Kong, Godzilla. And great action, too. Good cinematography. Number 2 is actually, it's a tie, actually. It's kind of a cop-out, but I have it tied between King of the Monsters and Godzilla and Kong. I kind of both like these both equally, you know, with a slight edge to Godzilla and Kong. I don't know why, but that's probably just recency bias. So, but King of the Monsters is still up there because it had like Rodan had one of the best scenes, and Ghidorah was the best villain, monster mm-hmm. villain, and the whole MonsterVerse. So, but anyways,
it felt like it was a movie made by fans, shot for fans. Mm-hmm. And it was very fan oriented, that movie.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, it's what's good for the goose is good for the gander in that aspect. And I would say, yeah, I'd probably put King of Monsters first. It's so hard trying to place Gareth Edwards' film because he did such a good job of telling a human story.
Yeah.
And you don't see that a lot. But you know, I have a hard time putting it above, you know, Godzilla versus Kong, Godzilla X Kong, same, with Kong Skull Island. I like the storyline a whole lot better, as far as like just keeping me engaged. And then you have, you know, you got two wars in there. You got John C. Reilly's character. I would probably follow, your schematic on those movies.
Yeah.
To put it short, maybe that's a cop out too, but I felt like I was like, man, he's making a really good case. And King of Monsters is my favorite as well.
Yeah.
Because it's so much action in that film.
Yeah.
And it's, I feel like it's never a dull moment. Not that, you know, Godzilla versus Kong, isn't ever a dull moment. I think it kind of follows that, but I feel like they crammed more into King of Monsters.
Yeah. If it were for the success of 2014 Godzilla, we wouldn't have Shin Godzilla nor Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah,
because yeah, they were saying that Bono, Yoshitaka Bono, who was shopping Godzilla in the U.S., you know, before 2014, he said that Toho was done. They were absolutely done with Godzilla. They didn't see a way forward with the franchise. Mm-hmm. So if it weren't for the success of 2014, it's like Toho was like, oh. Okay, well, I guess there are still some legs in it after all. So, you know, so that's why they decided to do Shin Godzilla because
of 2014. Can you blame them after watching Final Wars?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Final Wars is...
what a mess.
Yeah, it was a mess. It's
got humorous. Some cool moments in it, but what a messy movie.
Yeah, yeah, it was a lot of monster action, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, the human side was pretty tepid.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways... we'll see if MonsterVerse will really push it, if they'll bring in aliens or not. We'll see.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So well, anyhow. Yeah.
I think we might have set a record for the latest in an episode we've ever gotten to the feature film. I could be wrong on that, but it seems that way. But you know, none of this would be possible. You know, it's funny because we did 2014 Godzilla back in like November when Minus One was fixing.
Yeah.
And I realize now Maybe we should have flip-flopped that. Maybe we should have done 54 Godzilla then and minus one, and 14 Godzilla now, but it doesn't matter. Because none of this would be possible if this franchise that turns 70 this coming November was not started in 1954 with the original Godzilla film, also known in Japan as Gojira. And that is our feature film today, is the original 1954 Godzilla. A movie that is an all-time classic. It started a genre within itself. Well, to be fair, didn't Rodan come out a couple years before Godzilla,
if I remember correctly? No, it came after.
You're thinking of the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms 1 year before Godzilla. Well,
no, I know that did. But, but
Rodan was the first Toho color film.
I knew it was something like that. And but you know, this movie was built out of an idea the writer had for after dealing with Japan, dealing with their feelings and rebuilding in post-war Japan after the bomb, and that he came up with ideas for this creature. It's basically, you know, Japan's recovering in post-war, and ships start disappearing, and strange things are happening, and they're not sure what's going on. But there is a local legend about a creature named Godzilla that has maybe. It may be causing this, and most people find that as just legend. They don't believe it until Godzilla shows up. And sure enough, he was born from the fires of radiation and atom bomb testing. And he shows up to destroy Tokyo until they find a way to stop him themselves by a scientist who creates a oxygen destroyer who's so afraid to use it because of what he saw the world do with nuclear weapons. And he doesn't want his weapon to be used in that same way either. So decides to So he decides to not use it at first. So he realizes this is the only way to save the world, and they use the oxygen destroyer to send Godzilla to his death by making him disappear. And Long, I know this is one of the most influential films in your lifetime for you. So I'm going to let you start to talk off on this movie.
Okay. Well, did you know that when this movie first came out in Japan, even though it made a lot of money in Japan, Japanese critics did not like the movie at all. They thought it was, they thought it was in poor taste to do a monster movie based on the atomic bomb, bombings that they experienced. And that was an interesting fact, because, I didn't realize that, because I was under the,
and the hydrogen bomb too.
Well, yeah, well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, both, yeah.
But they, but yeah, I was surprised that the Japanese critics, when that movie came out, did not like the movie. They thought it was in poor taste. Exploitive, too. Yeah. But the luckily, they were proven wrong by the box office. Kind of how Godzilla movies have been in its whole history of the franchise. Yeah. Like, critics don't like the films, but they still make money. So I guess this is our Fast and the Furious franchise. Oh, I could kind of see why, you know, why people hate Fast and the Furious, but it still makes money somehow.
Yeah. You know,
I don't understand it personally, why, but now I kind of see why.
That's funny, man.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I kind of went a different path. I watched the American version of the 54 movie, and while you guys watched the original Japanese, and I thought the American version is getting a lot of unjustified hate from purist fans, because it was like, oh, you know. It's like they were, I don't know, the way the fans kind of see the U.S. version of this movie, they kind of treat it as if it's like an insult to the filmmakers of the original vision and how they took out the atomic bomb message. But, you know, at that time, it was 1954, so they wanted to make it as appealing as possible in the American audience. So, but it made a lot of money, and it's,
But the film isn't that different, other than taking out that message and the edits of Raymond Burr being put in it. It's almost the same film.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah.
And Toho approved most of it from what I read. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They added, the American version added some screams and yells. Mm-hmm. You know, like when the scene where Godzilla, like, blew his fiery breath on a crowd on the block, you see them dying.
Right.
It was completely silent in the Japanese version, but it's like you mm-hmm. hear the added screams, like, ah! Yeah. You know? It's kind of funny. And I kind of missed that. It was like, okay. The American version, they were screaming, but not in this one. So, yeah, that's kind of weird. But I saw the American version first before I saw the original Japanese. So, just like everyone else in the U.S. So, but it was the first movie I actually seen Godzilla die at the end of the movie. It's like, yeah. Whoa, that's, you know, as a kid, I was like, whoa, he can actually die? It's like, yeah, okay. That's the first. I first saw the movie when I was like 5 years old or 6 years old or something like that.
Yeah, because the sequel, Godzilla Raids Again, is actually a completely different Godzilla. Yeah.
Yeah. I always fell asleep during Raids Again. You know, I could never stay awake, even though it was like the first
Godzilla. Well, nothing happens until the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. So, but King Kong versus Godzilla in 1962 saved the franchise, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and it went from there. But really, I have not much to say. I mean, I love the cinematography in the film. The black and white really adds a really dark tone to the film, mm-hmm. especially when you see Godzilla's silhouette up against the fiery landscape of burning Tokyo. Mm-hmm. It's haunting. The score is haunting.
Yes.
And then it was like one of the few Godzilla movies that showed the aftermath of his rampage, showing victims and being hurt and all that, you know. So it's like a war scene.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's one thing I truly noticed this film, that the technology they have and the cameras and the lighting equipment they have, and I'm assuming, you know, summer of 1953 when they shot this before it was released in 54, is remarkably well done. The cinematography, the special effects work, the sense of using the score to set the mood, the sense of lighting, it's really good. And for Japanese production, you know, because they, which at that time was still, you know, very low budget compared to American productions. And I think that's what makes the movie work so well.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. The actors are very good. They buy into what they're doing. And they take themselves serious. They act well. There's some very subtle, I think you're not supposed to laugh at it, but like where they're having the hearing and then the lady keeps hollering and he tells her to shut up about five times. It's like, I don't think you're supposed to laugh at it, but it's a sign of the times. He's telling the woman to shut up.
You know?
It's like, know your place, be quiet. You know?
Yeah.
So there's some subtle things like that show the time which it was made. It's also a movie that's, you know, the writers are very careful. They don't, you know, it's funny, they never directly blame the bomb or blame Americans. It's all alluded to that that's how he was probably born. But I think that's credit to just smart writing. And it gives a sense of, like you said, a haunting sense to it.
Yeah.
Because Godzilla in this original film is absolutely frightening.
Terrible.
He doesn't give a fuck who he steps on, who he destroys, who he burns. He's stomping through Tokyo. Just get out of my way. I'm going to kill you all. And that's why the scientists realize that he has to use the machine or more people are going to die. And then he ultimately sacrifices himself because he doesn't want this weapon to fall into the wrong hands.
Yep. Serizawa. Yeah, that's the name of the
Serizawa. That's right. I knew it was Serizawa. I was going to say it. Matt, don't I know you've had a lot of first time watches this year. This was not your first time seeing the original.
No, I want to say it was my second or third time, I believe. And I watched it. I had to watch it twice. I'd watch it in halves. But it's it reminded me so much of what I liked from Minus One, and reminded me of what made this film good is that it preyed on the fears at that time of Japan with the, you know, the test bombing of the hydrogen bomb.
Bikini Atoll Fantasy.
Mm-hmm. The Lucky Lucky Dragon, number 5. Yep. And, you know, so you had that in there. And I didn't know that critics actually didn't like it long. That's surprising.
Yeah.
I knew it was very successful, but I didn't know that either.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of when they talk about when the victims died of radiation sickness from the being exposed, it's a very, very understated way of describing how horrible that death is.
Yeah.
Because when you die of radiation sickness that quickly after being exposed to it, because one of them died like 48 hours after being exposed to it. That means their body was literally breaking down from the radiation damage at a molecular level. You know, they're literally melting to death.
Yeah.
It's like, they died from radiation sickness, but they didn't really, that's kind of an understated way of describing the horrible death that is. If you've watched Chernobyl, that's a very good,
accurate
portrayal.
Yeah. That's
Yeah.
They made us watch that in high school, and it's like the husband and the wife, the husband's face is like melting off.
Yeah.
And they're still trying to smile.
Well, I was referring to the HBO.
HBO show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a documentary.
Yeah, Well, I mean, you're not off the mark at all, Matt.
Right,
because you're correct in that. Because, you know, the guy, one of the firefighters, picked up a chunk of graphite that was highly radiated, and he freaking died instantly because it melted his hand off.
Damn it.
Yeah, it's like, anyways. And that's even wearing a radiation suit. So,
jeez.
But anyhow, to kind of circle back about Eiji Tsuburaya, the special effects director, he was a big fan of the original King Kong movie. And when Tomoyuki Tanaka, the producer, shared his idea of doing a monster movie similar to King Kong, he's like, Tsuburaya's like, oh, great. Then I could get to try my hand in stop motion. And then Tsuburaya says, well, you got only 7 months to make this movie. It's like, oh, well, I don't have enough time to do stop motion then.
Yeah.
So we'll just, you know, figure out some other way of doing it. So, yeah, the whole Soupmation thing was thought up of. And, you know, I can't think of anything before Godzilla that used Soupmation and miniatures.
Yeah, I think it was all stop motion.
Yeah.
What was that land of that?
Soupmation, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, or before that. Yeah, it was mostly stop motion before Godzilla, huh?
Mm-hmm. Them.
Oh, them. That's practical effects. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they used actual giant mechanical ants in them. And
same with Tarantula.
Tarantula, you used a superimposed Tarantula.
Superimposed and practical effects, yeah.
Yeah. The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms was all stop motion.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're doing in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Shoot, what else are you doing? I might as well just sit in with y'all.
Yeah, you might as well hang this month, man.
All right.
Well, we'll blow our water. We're doing The Shape of Water next week, a modern monster movie.
Oh, okay.
And Beast of 20,000 Fathoms, and then The Mist.
Oh, The Mist. Okay.
Yeah. So I tried to get a good variety of different monsters.
Yeah. We should circle back to Godzilla again in November, because that's the actual 70th anniversary.
That's in the plans.
Yeah. All cool. Right. Anyways, I definitely scoring this film, I'd give it an A, you know.
Yes.
For sure. Easy A. So
yeah, I mean it's a classic. It's fun A franchise 70 years later. Ended up being way more successful than they thought it would, so they immediately went into production on Godzilla Raids Again, which that showed by going in production quickly, because it wasn't as good of a film. And like you said, it almost killed the franchise, and Godzilla versus Kong helped bring it back. And then they went on to make your favorite Godzilla film, Godzilla versus Mothra. And I think we can safely say from there, the rest is history. I mean, they did it one time, shelved Godzilla after 1974, whatever it was, and felt it was time to give it a break until they brought him back with the Return of Godzilla, which was interesting because in America, they did the same thing again. They re-edited the film with Raymond Burr scenes for Godzilla 1985. Mm-hmm. I'm old enough to remember that coming out in theaters, which is strange. Yeah. I really like Godzilla 1985, even the American version. I actually think it's a really fun Godzilla movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then they did that, and then they gave it another rest again, but only much shorter rest after that era, only about 5 years, because the moderate success of the Matthew Broderick film, even though people didn't like it, it still was successful, and it allowed Toho to say in 1999, like, oh, let's do more. And that's when they did Godzilla Millennium. And, you know, and we're still getting Godzilla movies now. I mean, we got a...
Yeah. Yeah, to circle movie. Back a little bit, too, to Raymond Burr. In Godzilla 1985, Raymond Burr would not appear in that movie if they did not take the nuclear message serious. And he said,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so hats off to Raymond Burr for respecting the roots of Godzilla, even though back then he could have just got an easy paycheck, but he stood his ground and he said, look, you know, I know to y'all Godzilla is silly, but, you know, originally he's very serious about the whole nuclear message thing. So actually, I'm not going to, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, and those films, I liked some movies in the show era, but the Heisei era films, some of those are actually really good.
Yeah.
That 85 is good. I like First Biollante is good, you know.
Yeah.
And some of those are some solid movies. And then
and
like you said, now luckily the success of the MonsterVerse has allowed us to get Shin Godzilla Minus One. And obviously Minus One was very successful. So I'm sure Toho's thinking what to do next. And you know, I think there's been a lot of talk on the internet that the reason Toho has not said anything is because their deal with Legendary Pictures is allowing Godzilla Kong the New Empire to play out and make its money. And then we'll get hopefully an announcement soon on the U.S. release of Minus One and what Toho is going to do next. But I would think with the 70th anniversary this year that likely there's going to be news by the end of the year for what Toho is going to do next. I would think that's definitely coming.
Yeah. They'll probably announce it on the anniversary, if anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause isn't there a Godzilla Day in November during the anniversary?
November 3rd. Yeah. November 3rd. Godzilla Day. Oh, and I wanted to also mention that what was it? That's right. It's kind of related to Godzilla Minus One, but I was watching an interview of Takashi Yamazaki, and he was saying, like, one of the Toho producers came up to him when he was making the film. It's like, hey, did you know that this is like the first time a Godzilla movie's ever done the period piece? And Yamazaki's like, what? What do you mean? And then he says, like, every Godzilla movie is a contemporary film. Mm-hmm. It's not set in the future. It's not set in the past.
And it takes place in the current time.
Yeah. This is like the first Godzilla movie that's portraying the past. And, you know, that's how old the franchise is. Like, you know what? We're watching it. It's a time capsule. Because we're watching the 54, but at that time, that's, you know, accurate to the time period.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So everything's a time capsule to us. It looks like, you know, but it's such a long history. But yeah, it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, Minus One is the first period piece ever.
Yeah. I mean, it's phenomenal for it to last this long, and it's the longest running movie franchise in history. I mean,
70 years
and the most
30 films, something movies. Probably.
It's incredible. It's hats off to the people of Toho that kept it going all these years, and Americans finding it through home video. I mean, VHS was huge for Godzilla in the 80s. I mean, people find it, cable television, you know.
Oh, yeah, hats off to
things like
television.
That. You know, I mean,
local stations showing it every Saturday morning, too. Mm-hmm. You know, keeping it alive. It was growing up as a Godzilla fan, it was tough, you know, because, you know, me and Mark, we were alive in half the franchise's life cycle. Right. And so, I mean, for me personally, it was hard to come by with Godzilla content besides what was shown on TV. And it was kind of like a closeted secret in a way, too, because it was like, okay, you got your Star Wars and Star Trek fans, they get made fun of, right? But below that, you know, it's like
below that
section is like freaking Godzilla fans who are all ridiculed even harder. Yeah. Because like, oh, you like giant monsters? That's even worse than Star Trek and Star Wars, you know? It's like, shut up. Stop picking right. on me. You know? They're cool, damn it.
Yeah.
Stop picking
and,
on me.
And hats off to help, too, from like Marvel Comics, making a comic book in the 70s, keeping Godzilla popular there.
Yeah.
And yeah. even Hanna-Barbera, even though the cartoon is silly, it kept it in the limelight, you know? Mm-hmm. Really spectacular franchise, tons of toys and merchandise. And I went circling back too to Godzilla Kong New Empire. Do you like it when movies meta themselves, where the podcast guy's got Godzilla toys on his desk? I think it's kind of cool. You know?
Yeah. And then you reminded me of like, he had like one, he mentioned on the podcast that he had this one constant troll called Ghidorah Stan.
Right. Yeah, I heard that too.
Who kept picking on him or trolling him or something. That's kind of funny.
I'm kind of cool with the meta stuff as long as it's subtle like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's one problem I had with The Matrix Resurrections. It was too much. I'm like, okay, this is stupid.
Yeah.
You know, don't overdo it.
Yeah, it lost the farm on that one.
Right.
That's another thing that I wanted to circle back just a little bit more on Godzilla and Kong is that you know, when we grow up watching some adaptations of our favorite franchises, there's always this element of, you know, American Hollywood filmmaking that's like, oh, we got to make sense of this. We got to make sense of this. We got to make it more realistic. Mm-hmm. You know, like, even with, what's a good example? Like, Batman 89, you know, it's dark. It kept in the spirit of the character, but he killed, kind of. You know, and then, oh, we got to make sense of Joker's origins by making him tied to Batman's origins or whatever.
Right.
And it's just like what I like about Godzilla and Kong is that it fully commits to its world. It doesn't break its own rules, you know, right. Which I like, you know, it's like you could tell that there was no studio interference, you know, minimal at best, but you could tell that each director in the franchise kept to their vision. Each film has its own voice, you know, which I really respect. Yeah. You know?
Right. 100%. Yeah. No, I agree. And I just wish that there was a little more explanation for some of the things that occurred.
Yeah.
Like, it really bugs me. Like, where did us humans get all this tech from?
So, That's
probably like, okay, you know, who's financing this? Monarch was almost broke and going under. Now they have all this tech.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You look at freaking how grounded 2014 was with Monarch. Yeah, you know, the real
even
world
King
military.
Of the Monsters was fairly grounded.
Yeah, it was fairly grounded. It was pushing it with the big mothership stealth bomber, you know. And then freaking Godzilla versus Kong. Like, well, whatever. Let's go full sci-fi fantasy, just like the Showa era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I'm waiting for Maser tanks.
Right.
You know,
but that's where the Showa era comes into play with these new movies. It's like, the show era seems relatively normal. Then all of a sudden there's aliens on Earth and they're bringing King Ghidorah here. And it's like, wait, what?
And then we could, the Showa era, you know, destroy all monsters. We could casually fly to Pluto in 24 hours.
Yeah.
You know,
is that the one with the elite space team that had like, they had the commander of the ship, like, oh, do this. You know,
that's Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, if I remember right. But I know a lot. I just recently watched Destroy All Monsters, and I'm like, wait, what a minute. There's aliens doing what? It like comes out of nowhere. There's no explanation for it. It just happens.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, so we're going to Pluto. Sure.
Godzilla versus Gigan had the cockroach aliens, you know?
Yeah.
And then Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla had the ape aliens, you know, from the Planet of the Apes craze, you know?
Yeah, it literally gets to the point in the Showa era where they are just like, you know what? Audience isn't paying attention anyway. They just want to see monsters. That's literally how it feels.
Yeah.
You know?
And then freaking Godzilla versus Megalon, the underground civilization that sends a giant beetle against Godzilla. And it was made under 3 weeks, by the way.
What? Really?
Godzilla versus Megalon, So, anyhow.
No.
That's cool. It's a super special rule.
When we get to November and the 70th anniversary, we're definitely going to circle back around and do another Godzilla film or two and celebrate the big guy in all his glory properly. And hopefully by November, we have copies of Minus One to watch at home. I'm surely by then.
That would be nice.
That'd be great.
Yeah. And, But yeah, man, we're going to continue Monsters Month next week. And as I kind of threw this out there earlier, but we're going to talk a modern day classic monster film, a movie that won Best Picture just a few years ago. And, you know, Guillermo del Toro is well known for his spectacular creations of monsters and films. And so we're going to talk his modern masterpiece, The Shape of Water.
If I told you about her, the princess without voice, what would I say?
Eliza, come on. Eliza, hurry.
She deaf?
Mute, sir. She can hear you.
You clean that lab, you get out.
This may very well be the most sensitive asset ever to be housed in this facility.
You may think that thing looks human. Stands on two legs, right? But we're created in the Lord's image. You don't think that's what the Lord looks like, do you?
This creature is intelligent. Capable of language, of understanding emotions.
When he looks at me, he does not know how I am incomplete. He sees me as I am.
J'avoue, je n'ai bavé pas vous. Mon amour, avant d'avoir eu vent de vous.
The natives in the Amazon worshiped him like a god.
Get him out. What are you talking about? No.
We need to take it apart, learn how it works.
I don't want an intricate, beautiful thing destroyed.
We can do nothing. I'm sorry.
Don't do this, Eliza.
What is she saying?
Don't do this.
Oh, God, it's not even human.
And this is a good film, man. It's different. Not your typical monster film. It's almost a romance monster film in some ways, but a evil villain in Michael Shannon that you just mm-hmm. want to jump through your screen and kill yourself by the end of the film.
You mean kill him?
And, you know, it's not necessarily my favorite Guillermo del Toro film, but I mad respect for it and what he pulled off in this movie to win Best Picture. And so we're going to talk that next week as Monsters Month continues on the show. And Long, thanks for coming on with your Godzilla knowledge, and you are always welcome on the show. You know that.
Yeah. I'm here to spread the gospel of Godzilla.
There we go.
And,
God, I missed your 2014 one.
Yeah, I don't remember. But the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs, as always. And but we thank everyone for listening every week. And until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long.
And remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Do it.